Hi, Teen Creep listeners. It's Lindsay Cato.
And it's Kelly Nugent.
Hooray.
Hooray. We have a brand new podcast, which I'm sure you've heard about, but we're going to tell you about it again.
The town is a-talking, or we've just talked about it here.
Sweet Valley will never be the same. We're taking things a little bit more highbrow with a new podcast called Public Domain Theater.
Yeah, we came up with it for our Patreon originally, but we got such good feedback and we so enjoyed doing it that we wanted to have guests on and give it to everybody. So now it's available to everyone.
And we are so proud of how this first episode came out. We read The Egg with Rhea Butcher that we decided we needed to get y'all hooked.
Yeah, we got to put it on the Teen Creeps feed so that you know what you're missing and will get, because recording this with Rhea was so fun. I couldn't even believe it. Like, we are sweating and cry laughing by the end. It was a good time for all.
Yeah. And we've gotten some great feedback about it from some listeners. So we just wanted to spread the cheer.
Yeah. So it's an easy way for you to discover it and see if it's for you. And then if you decide you want to subscribe, just look up Public Domain Theater.
It's available on the Forever Dog Network and wherever you get your podcasts.
We release new episodes every Thursday.
And open your ears, because here it is.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater. This week, Sherwood Anderson's The Egg. We are joined by esteemed guest, Rhea Butcher, and your hosts, Kelly Nugent and Lindsay Cato.
Hi, welcome to Public Domain Theater, the podcast of highbrow readings and lowbrow commentary. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Cato.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent, and we are joined today, like I said earlier, by the host of the podcast Three Swings on the Forever Dog Podcast Network, co-creator, co-writer, co-star of the show Take My Wife, seasons 1 and 2, now available on iTunes and Amazon Video. And now you can find them on tour March 30th to April 14th. Go to RheaButcher.com to see the list of cities and buy tickets. Ladies and gentlemen, Rhea Butcher.
Hello. Wow, that was everything I'm doing. What a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I can't wait to discuss this lovely story about an egg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as I know.
It reminds me immediately of that weird cartoon with the egg. Did you ever see that cartoon? I'll show it to you guys when we're done. I'm sure people listening are like, I know what it is.
We'll take a break right now and silently watch it.
Mumbling guy eating like a, I don't know. You know when people in like England, those soft-boiled eggs in the little cup.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's like cracking it, and then there's somebody like, no! Like inside the egg, like yelling
inside
at him.
Inside the egg?
And so then it becomes this weird existential experience. It's a weird cartoon, and I'm pretty sure I saw it on Sesame Street.
It messed me up
for the rest of my life.
I think that's what we're reading.
I hope so.
I feel like your whole life has been a journey to this point to work this out.
I would say you've arrived.
This is it. I've made it. Mama,
looks
I've made
like
it.
Like we made it. Wow.
We don't have the rights to that.
Okay, that's all I can do. Let's take that back.
Not in the public domain.
Not yet. Fingers crossed. Knock, knock.
Well, there goes all the hard work we put in to make sure this is legal.
We're doing Shania Twain Theater.
That would be a good podcast. Well, thank you for being our very first guest.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited about it.
For a bit of background for whoever is listening who doesn't already listen to our other podcast, Teen Creeps, this podcast was born as an idea for our Patreon account channel.
Yeah, for our Patreon listeners.
Yeah, as a bit of extra content, as a thank you.
A little bonus.
And then we enjoyed doing it so much that now we are making it an actual
awesome.
The people have spoken. Podcast.
That's great.
Yeah, we're going to give it to you guys for free.
So we've only done it with each other, and now
we're inviting a third.
Opening it up to other people. You understand.
You know how it goes.
Sometimes you get bored with each other.
So we get a little walkabout.
Hall pass.
Oh, nice. Do you have any high school literature that like stuck out to you, like a sign reading that you were like, oh my goodness?
No, I'm going to be very real. Like, my wife is very much a reader and always will ask me, have you read this? And I'm like, I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, honey, you know I don't read. And I'm like trying to catch up. It's not that I, you know, whatever. There's no shame in not reading. Although there is at the same time. I understand. It's both things.
Yeah.
But I like very firmly just, I was like an avid reader as a child. I was like ahead in school reading wise and stuff. And then whatever happened in my education, like, I think because I was ahead, I got sort of like put to pasture, basically. And like, I was just like alone reading. And then I was just like, I'm bored, and like just got into sports. And that's silly. And then I have this thing. I was really good at, you know, like when I think we're around the same age range. When we were kids, they just had like the Iowa basic skills testing. Like, we didn't have the testing in schools that we have now where it's like, the teachers are failing and because they didn't pass this test.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know what that is.
Hey, are you whatever on this level? Yeah, and I would take
standard
these.
Standard and gifted.
We had the SATs.
Yeah. I could just.
That's what I knew about.
We did these through like elementary school and high school. We had to take these like weird tests to see where the students were at and stuff. And I was just like really good at that. And I could do it without studying. And I can do the same thing with a book. Like, I can read the questions about a book and infer from the questions what the book is about. Like, I'm just very good at figuring that out without reading the book. But at the same time, I don't have the experience then of the book itself.
Yeah.
And so I've learned in my adult times that like, oh, that's actually fun. It's not like an assignment that you have to work around.
Yeah.
Because I do remember having to read October Sky for college. And I was just like,
oh, man, that's an interesting
one. That sounds
really
boring.
That one sticks out of my head. It was so boring. I also went to Catholic school my whole life. So like we didn't have like tons of super.
You didn't get spicy reads.
No, I mean, mostly my reading was the Bible and I didn't want to do that too much. So
you know, I almost went to a Catholic junior high and high school.
Really?
And then I chose not to.
Good for you.
Because it was going to be a choice. It was just like those were the private schools in the area.
Wow. And then you were allowed to choose?
Me and my parents had talked about like, let's send Lindsay to a private school. And I was like, sure. And then I tested to like get in and I got in and then I went, now I'm afraid of leaving my friends. Barbara wrote me this really nice note. Maybe they do like me. And then I stayed and shouldn't have.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's fine. See, I stayed and feel like I shouldn't have. So it's like,
it depends.
School too. So like, I don't know.
I
wish we just had good, not good public school. I just mean, just like, we should just have schools. Yeah. Like, there's just like private schools. Yeah. You know, there's like, it's just, but that's capitalism. Anyway, that's a whole nother podcast.
And that's where we are.
I do think I would have regretted it though, because we had a much more diverse list of books than I even realized, just like talking to people from other parts of the country. Like, did you have, you said you were in Iowa?
No, Ohio.
Oh, I thought you said Iowa.
I said the testing is like Iowa basic skills for whatever reason.
Oh, okay. Did not know what that was. Yeah. Assumed it was based in Iowa.
Me too.
That's where they made it up. Who knows? I have no idea what it is.
Big Iowa.
Was, but classic. No, I'm from Ohio. The other four letter word.
So in Ohio, did you have a lot of Hispanic authors on the list?
Unless you mean Jesus.
Ah.
That is what I meant.
Jesus, the author.
Jesus Christo. No, not at all. I mean, I think we literally read, like, I remember watching 12 Angry Men and like reading To Kill a Mockingbird in like high school, which is like not a high school, that's a middle school sixth grade book.
But that wasn't on our list for some reason, To Kill a Mockingbird. I didn't read it.
We read that
I was
in sixth
adult.
grade.
Yeah,
see,
that's nice.
It was
a good book.
My teacher,
The Jungle, that was a book that economics class, and that one I did read, and I was like, I'm glad I'm a vegetarian.
That is a disgusting,
it's gross,
so foul.
Pickled foot, come on man.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert for a 200 year old book.
Literally spoiler alert.
Oh, spoiler.
But not really, because pickling actually extends the life of the food, so technically
it's preserved.
I was thinking more of the rest of the book,
of all the other spoiled food.
But also, like, I haven't read it. I just know what it is. So for all I know, no spoiling at all.
The spoiled futures of all the human beings.
Yes,
who
worked in those.
Those
factors.
Poor people.
Conditions. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of poor people that have just terrible lives.
Oh yeah.
Do we know anything about Sherwood Anderson?
We do know a few things, thanks to producer Brett. who wrote this, who
editorialized list. A bit on this on this bio.
Look, we never said that we had no opinions on this podcast. This podcast is 100% opinions.
1,000% opinions. I just wanted to tell you guys before I forgot, because I wrote a note in my phone that I needed to tell you, that I had a dream. We were recording this podcast and I kept hearing someone singing, and it was Brett, who had mic'd himself up and was trying to like give the
give a like mood. Some background vocals.
It was like he was scatting.
Wow.
So weird. But I was like, all right, I have to.
Why didn't you tell us you can scat? That's a hard skill.
That takes years.
Yeah.
Years of work.
Years of jazz training.
We see scat. We see Brett like push like a tambourine under the table. He's like, never mind.
Another day.
A tambourine.
You know, the scat instrument, the tambourine. Okay.
Do they use those mouth harps for that?
Oh, maybe.
Wang, 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 that thing?
I think
that was pretty accurate.
That was pretty good.
We're definitely getting to a point where this is not scatting.
It's true.
We have made it something else altogether that I think we should start a band for, but absolutely, it's not scatting.
Yeah.
Mouth harp and tambourine.
Yeah.
I'll take off. That's what the kids are clamoring for these days. Give me like some more mouth harp.
Percussion and weird like twangy sounds.
Twang and metal in your mouth.
All right.
Get back.
Baby boy Sherwood.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk this guy. So he was born in 1876 and he died in 1941. Do the math, people.
We're not going to tell you how old he was. He was born in the small farming town of Camden, Ohio.
Ooh, I know that place.
His family moved around the state frequently searching for new opportunities.
As
but with
so
each move, their prospects dimmed.
Ooh.
Doomed at each turn by his father's alcoholism.
Ooh, classic story.
Good work, Brett.
Partly as a result of these misfortunes, young Sherwood became adept at finding various odd jobs to help his family, earning the nickname Jobby.
That is a funny nickname.
There was some speculation that that nickname was from Brett.
Earning the nickname from me, Jobby.
He left school at age 14. As a teenager, Anderson worked as a newsboy, errand boy, water boy, cow driver, stable groom, and perhaps printer's devil?
Pause.
Mm. Yes,
what?
Brett. What?
What? What is a printer? Oh, he linked us to something.
Oh shit!
Can I guess what a printer's devil is?
What is it?
I think it's some sort of an assistant to a printer, because you know, like printing books and newspapers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been around that job, kind of, and it's a lot of equipment and it's a lot of very difficult work, and setting type takes a really long time, which is where we got the phrase "mind your P's and Q's." By the way, because they look the same when you look at them and they're backwards.
Oh shit!
And so I assume that the printer's devil is sort of like a task person that helped out with cleaning all that crap, because you would have to clean all the blocks and stuff like that, and also lift and move all kinds of stuff, paper, all that stuff. That's my guess.
Guess what? You're right.
Yay!
Apprentice in a printing establishment. They perform various tasks, mix tubs of ink, fetch type.
Yes, exactly.
And then
that's what I thought.
Whoa!
We are hyped on this podcast.
Woo! So, and then this article goes on to list a number of notable people that have been printer's devils. Guess who's not listed?
Can you?
Rhea Butcher.
Rhea Butcher's not listed.
Not printer's listed. Devil.
So you know what? I don't buy it. I don't think you were one.
That's, you know
who
what?
Are the famous
if it was
devils.
True, it would be on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Sherwood's not listed in there either, though. Sad.
Weird.
But I will say,
like Stephen King or something?
Just,
No, they're all like soup, like Stephen Benjamin King. Franklin.
Oh, okay.
Kelly, like, can you guess who my favorite person on this list is? And I will also show it to Rhea. You can both guess who my favorite person on this list is.
Just based off, like...
Just based off
name?
Looking at it, yeah.
Well,
I mean...
There's a couple really good names here. Is Anne... Okay, well, so I personally like Hoodoo Brown.
Nailed it!
Yes. 10 points.
I was going to say, it's got to be Hoodoo. Also, I'm a big fan of James Printer.
James... enough's enough, James Printer.
Hey, you got the name. You just go do the thing.
I also like Ambrose Bierce, because it's almost like Pierce, which is a... I feel like Ambrose Pierce...
Bierce.
Isn't that like a
Ambrose
person?
Bierce, that...
Ambrose
who
Bierce
is, that?
Is a famous person.
Let's check it out.
A notable man.
A library
short story
on my
writer, journalist, poet, college. And Civil War veteran. from Meigs County, Ohio.
I knew it! My library at my college is named Bierce Library. Guarantee you it's named after that dude.
This is the greatest
what
night.
Is this podcast?
How come, you know what, this is really...
We haven't even gotten to the story yet, oh my and this is exciting radio.
This is riveting. We have a special guest for you. It's Ambrose Bierce himself. You're like, Dad!
The reanimated corpse of Ambrose Bierce.
Dad!
It's the University of Akron mascot, Zippy the Kangaroo. The only Rhea female Butcher, mascot.
This is your life.
This is a great show.
No, thank you so much. You're like, it's all about
it's
me.
It's really
and
good.
Honestly,
I love it.
It's really
good.
I feel like we're nailing it and you're a big part of that.
We're all working together. We're all working together on a project we just walked into. The public domain.
The public
you understand.
Domain.
It gives and gives and gives and gives and gives.
And never takes.
Never.
Never takes any money.
Mm-mm.
This slow in the podcast is due to me trying to find where I was in my reading.
Of course, yeah. No, I understand.
Okay, so he worked as a printer's devil. Nice. Not to mention assistant to Irwin Anderson, sign painter.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
In addition
if
to assembling bicycles.
You say sign painter,
bicycles,
I'm like, Irwin!
Ooh.
In addition to assembling bicycles for the Elmore Manufacturing Company.
Elmore?
Even in his teens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Just some dude.
Interesting.
Elmore Manufacturing Company.
Oh, you don't
have to keep an eye out for that on American Pickers next time.
He didn't post a link. So I can only assume that there's no other story.
Probably
behind Elmore.
A short-lived bicycle company. Yes.
Even in his teens, Anderson's talent for selling was evident. A talent he would later draw on it. Oh, Brett.
Brett. You shouldn't have put that word in there.
Some typos. He would later draw on in a successful career in advertising. As a newsboy, he was said to have convinced a tired farmer in a saloon to buy two copies of the same evening paper.
No.
So, okay, hold on.
This is some Don Draper type shit.
I also need to know, Brett, if Brett guessed that the farmer was tired or if he found that in his research.
He's like, what did it say? Was he tired?
I mean, I would assume that most farmers would be tired.
You're tired. Classic.
That's true.
If you've ever witnessed actual farming,
yeah,
it's pretty tiring.
It's tiring. His mother died of tuberculosis in May 1895. Aww. And his father would disappear for weeks on end, leaving Sherwood effectively alone in the world. He settled in Chicago in late 1896.
While working day jobs for $2 a day for 10 hours of work.
Jesus Christ. Yeesh.
Sherwood also enrolled in night classes to further his education and became a voracious reader, particularly of the poetry of Robert Browning, Alfred Tennyson, and Walt Whitman. And now it's Kelly's turn.
Sorry, I got distracted. I skipped ahead to see what happened to him.
Kelly, you can't skip
to the end of the book
on a podcast about reading.
No, don't worry. 1898 to 99, he fought in Cuba in the Spanish-American War. And then in the early 1900s, he returned back to Ohio and again enrolled in adult education courses, graduating with high marks. He was chosen to give the commencement speech and delivered a lengthy discourse on Zionism.
What school? Also, Zionism?
Zionism? That took a turn. It doesn't say what school, just adult education.
Brett.
I must find out. What if we are alumni? I mean, I would not be surprised.
Dad?
Yeah,
Dad?
Exactly. Great, great grandfather?
He returned to Chicago and got a job as a copywriter, worked his way up. Finally making decent money, moves to Cleveland, marries, three kids, starts publishing stories in his spare time. And then shit starts to go wrong.
While working as a copywriter in Cleveland, one of the manufacturers that he wrote copy for, United Factories, produced a large batch of defective incubators. Anderson had personally guaranteed the incubators in his ad copy. Personally guaranteed? He didn't need to insert himself into the ad copy.
I had that question while reading this earlier. I was like, why?
Soon, letters addressed to Anderson began to arrive from customers both desperate and angry. The strain from months of answering hundreds of these letters while continuing his demanding schedule at work and home led to a nervous breakdown.
It sounds like Twitter.
It does sound like Twitter.
He's
like running.
The man invented Twitter by accident.
He got hounded on Twitter about incubators. And that's how the internet was born.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, November 28th, 1912, Anderson came to his office in a slightly nervous state. According to his secretary, he opened some mail and in the course of dictating a business letter became distracted. After writing a note to his wife, he murmured something along the lines of, I feel as though my feet were wet and they keep getting wetter.
Oh, man. Poor guy.
And left the office.
Oh.
4 days later, on Sunday, December 1st, a disoriented Anderson entered a drugstore on East 152nd Street in Cleveland. And asked the
LeBron
pharmacist.
James?
Yeah. And asked the pharmacist, LeBron James, to help figure out his identity. Unable to make out what the incoherent Anderson was saying, the pharmacist discovered a phone book on his person.
Huh? This fool is carrying around a phone book?
That shit's heavy.
I'm assuming address book is the same as phone book. And called the number of Edwin Baxter. Right. Hey, like my dog.
Aw, Edwin.
A member of the Elyria Chamber of Commerce. Baxter came, recognized Anderson, and promptly had him checked into the Huron Road Hospital in downtown Cleveland, where Anderson's wife, who he would hardly recognize, went to meet him.
Oh, this is a memento type shit. Yeah. Sammy Jenkins.
Covered in tattoos.
Like Breaking Bad. He was cooking meth. Faked it all.
Yeah. While diagnoses for the 4 days of Anderson's wanderings have ranged from amnesia to lost identity to nervous breakdown, his condition is generally characterized today as a fugue state. This is totally Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson himself described the episode as escaping from his materialistic existence and was admired for his action by many young male writers who chose to be inspired by him.
Beat poetry bullshit right there.
What, you forgot your wife? Cool.
Oh, man.
Bro, give up this materialistic existence and let down all of my family obligations.
Everyone else take care of me.
Oh, here we go. He moved back to Chicago, divorced his wife.
Saw that coming.
And turned writing into a career with the publication of Winnsburg, Ohio in 1919, a collection of connected short stories that is considered the beginning of the modernist phase of American literature.
Oh, this asshole started all this shit.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me with this?
What do we consider modernist literature?
Don't look at me.
No idea.
Cool. We'll Google that in a second.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Kelly, do you want to Google it and I'll read?
Yeah.
Read on. In this work and others, he was one of the first writers to incorporate Freudian psychoanalysis into his stories. Anderson died on March 8th, 1941, at the age of 64. So if you did your math right, you should have gotten 64. Taken ill during a cruise to South America, he had been feeling abdominal discomfort for a few days, which was later diagnosed as perianitis. Anderson and his fourth wife, Jesus.
Ooh, well, he's busy in between.
64?
And his fourth wife, Eleanor Gladys Copenhaver, disembarked from the cruise liner Santa Lucia and went to the hospital in Colon, Panama, where he died on March 8th. An autopsy revealed he had accidentally swallowed a toothpick, which had damaged his internal organs.
Oh, my God.
And resulted in infection and then perianitis.
Oh, my God.
This is
that's awful.
Oh, a hypochondriac's nightmare.
Check this out,
you
guys.
It gets worse?
Yes. He was thought to have swallowed it in the course of eating the olive of a martini or hors d'oeuvre.
Oh, my God. Wait, so there's like a big plate of like sandwiches with little toothpicks on it, and he just eats the whole thing.
Oh.
He jumped
like
twice.
He's like some cartoon giant just like. Oh, my God. Oh. I mean, I've definitely bit into a sandwich with that little toothpick. Have you ever done that full force on your tooth?
Yeah,
and you're like,
sucks.
Oh, mama.
And it hurts so bad. Hits the roof of your mouth.
Yeah. And you're like, God, how did I not? I'm 35. It's really happened horrifying. Before.
I just don't see like going past that and being like, I'm gonna swallow this sandwich.
I mean, if I get an eyelash in my mouth, I'm like, oh my God. Body is like, reject. How did he just let the toothpick
well
go
you know what
through?
He was a real man.
That's
in
true
the turn of the century.
That's true. He was like, come on, man up, swallow the sandwich.
Come along, Sherwood. You can eat this toothpick if you really set your mind to it. You're one of the first modernist writers.
Modernism is a self-conscious break with traditional ways of writing in both poetry and prose fiction.
Oh, well, that's not...
That is some pansy-ass description.
That is a non-description.
It's not. It's just like, they did the thing that they don't do.
They stopped doing what we used to do and started doing
slightly different.
A different thing.
I feel like it's like...
I wonder if it's like it took us out of that phase of writing that we complained about when we read The Black Cat.
But I thought to myself that when...
Yeah,
like, or the telling you a story.
You will hardly believe such tales as I to tell.
Yeah.
But
now, when I tell
I swear
story,
to you that they were all true and of a m- up most, and I am an upstanding member, and please just hold your discomfort
hold on to your
toothpicks for just a moment. If you will be so kind as to at least hear my tale. It's like so defensive and weird.
Yeah.
Hang on, don't leave. Where are you going? Oh, sit on back down. Pick this book back up. I can't have your clothes like this.
I know that you have farming to do, and that writing is somewhat new to all of us, but it'll be fun.
I think the modernism thing is like, I forget who it is, but it's someone that does a lot of like run on sentences without any punctuation. What's her name?
I think that's like stream of consciousness.
Oh, no, you're wrong. You said her name.
Oh, so yeah. Incorrect.
The movies are back, baby. And if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Ys. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint, it's the name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Ys. Movies, Baby!
Or like Spoon River Anthology.
Not familiar. It sounds familiar, but I am not familiar.
I think it's like Masters. Or...
So where does like To Kill a Mockingbird fit into this?
I think To Kill a Mockingbird is.
So like, I've read Jurassic Park, so like, where does that fit into
modernism?
That's pretty modern.
It's pretty modern.
Dinosaurs on the beach, you know.
Yeah, dinos on the beach, man. Boop, boop.
Dino DNA.
Should we start reading this dang story?
Yes.
I can't wait to find out if this guy went to the same school.
Oh, wait. One thing. Is there anything more about the toothpick?
Not about the toothpick, but okay. Anderson's body was returned to the United States, where he was buried at Round Hill Cemetery in Marion, Virginia. Why Virginia?
What?
He was from Ohio.
Oh, you know what? Because he was. I bet that's military.
Oh. Yeah. Because he fought in the place he fought in Cuba.
Spanish-American War.
Classic.
Which is a war we did not need to get into. Thanks, Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
But his epitaph reads, "Life, not death, is the great adventure," which really seems like he was just like holding up the bird to whoever said death is the greatest adventure. He was like, fuck you, no it isn't, I don't want to die.
it seems like he's like fighting something that like no one thinks. Like he's like, like, life, not death, is the great adventure. Like,
well,
no one was like,
isn't that a line in Peter Pan? Like, to die would be a very big adventure or something.
In Peter Pan?
Yeah.
That's a nightmare. That's scary.
I mean, yeah, but Disney made all those, which, by the way, all that stuff was public domain until Disney got their
claws
on it. Yes, exactly. And now, like, we don't get new versions of that stuff because Disney, like, trademarked
all
of it.
Actually, you can. You just can't include the original things that they did to it.
Like their
that's why MGM made.
I don't want to go up against Disney, though. I'll just tell you that right now.
I'll do it pure now.
They got a little bit of money,
but that's why for the Wizard of Oz they made them ruby red slippers. That's why MGM did that, is so that nobody could take that, because the Wizard of Oz originally it's silver slippers.
Yeah, that
silver.
I did read. I remember that one time.
I remember reading that and being like, "What the
Here
fuck?
Are all
these
are
silver?
Weird as hell." Have you all seen The Return to Oz?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Love it.
It's terrifying as hell. Oh my God.
It's great.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, you guys ready for this egg?
Yes.
I'm ready
for
this egg.
Let's egg it.
All right.
I don't think you're ready for this
egg. they're like, you know what? Let's try that again. I think we can find something that rolls out the tongue a little better. Like, really? I think egg works great.
So we'll just round robin it.
Okay, great. And it's 10 pages, so we can do 3, 3, 4.
Uh-huh. And just so you guys know what's about to happen is we're just going to straight up read you this fucking story, and we will interrupt ourselves, we'll interrupt each other, and give you our real-time reactions to what's going on. We have not read this before.
No holds barred. Baby, it's like firing on all cylinders. Commentary's coming at you quick and fast. The Egg by Sherwood Anderson.
Good work.
My father was, I am sure, intended by nature to be a cheerful, kindly man. Until he was 34 years old, he worked as a farmhand for a man named Thomas Butterworth, whose place lay near the town of Bidwell, Ohio. He had a horse of his own, and on Saturday evenings drove into town to spend a few hours in social intercourse with other farmhands.
Driving, that's funny. I mean, it was driving, but it's just funny to think about it that way. Anyway, go on.
In town, he drank several glasses of beer and stood about in Ben Head's saloon, crowded on Saturday evenings with visiting farmhands. Songs were sung and glasses thumped on the bar. At 10 o'clock, Father drove home along a lonely country road.
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
What a lightweight.
Man, 10 o'clock, the club's just filling up.
Well, keep in mind, he had to wake up at 11 p.m. to
okay,
go.
Okay, farmer apologist over
point,
here. Made his horse comfortable for the night and himself went to bed, quite happy in his position in life.
I'm just imagining him like putting the horse in a sleeping bag or the
like
horse is
decided like,
can I camp out tonight? In a tent, in the lawn, you know what I mean? Like one of those nights you have a little radio out there or something.
I'm just imagining him putting himself to bed going, I'm really happy with my lot in life.
He had at that time no notion of trying to rise in the world.
Good one.
All right. Well, it was in the spring of his 35th year that Father married my mother, then a country school teacher.
Oh,
and in the following
getting up
spring,
there.
Yeah, he's ancient. And in the following spring, I came wriggling and crying into the world.
Disgusting.
Ew.
That's a gross.
Ew.
Come on, man.
Wriggling? You should be absolutely still.
Is he the egg?
He's the egg. The end.
I guessed it. I'm sorry, you guys. I spoiled it.
Something happened to the two people. They became ambitious. The American passion for getting up in the world took possession of them. It may have been that mother was responsible. Wow.
Because they had a baby?
I guess.
They had a baby and they were like, I'm going to die.
Wall Street. Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street. Penny stocks.
The baby comes out saying that.
Penny stocks.
And they're like, ambition. Being a school teacher, she had no doubt read books and magazines. She had, I presume, read of how Garfield, Lincoln, and other Americans rose from poverty
at
to
first,
fame and greatness.
I thought you meant the cat.
Yeah, me too. Immediately, that was all pink.
She had read great works such as Garfield
by Jimothy Davis.
Garfield meets Nirmal.
No, he hated Mondays.
Inspired by Nirmal.
And oh loved lasagna.
Odie! Odie, I'll die for you.
And yeah, John, whatever. Anyway.
John. And other Americans rose from poverty to fame and greatness as I laid beside her. In the days of her lying in, she may have dreamed that I would someday rule men in cities. At any rate, she induced Father to give up his place as a farmhand, sell his horse, and embark on an independent enterprise of his own. She was a tall, silent woman with a long nose and troubled gray eyes. Is she the horse?
Oh, great. She's the horse. She's the horse.
Oh, now we spoiled it again.
Sorry.
He's the egg and she's the horse.
For herself, she wanted nothing. For Father and myself, she was incurably ambitious. The first adventure.
The worst thing a woman can be.
Oh, caring for
don't
others.
Don't you dare be ambitious, you
reading
woman.
All those books.
The first venture into which the two people went turned out badly. They rented 10 acres of poor stony land on Griggs's Road, 8 miles from Bidwell, and launched into chicken raising.
Ambitious.
I'm going headfirst into chicken raising on a stony land on Griggs Road.
You're too greedy.
I grew into boyhood on the place and got my first impressions of life there. From the beginning, they were impressions of disaster, and if, in my turn, I am a gloomy man inclined to see the darker side of life, I attribute it to the fact that what should have been for me the happy, joyous days of childhood were spent on a chicken farm.
Cool.
One unversed in such matters can have no notion of the many and tragic things that can happen to a chicken. It is born out of an egg.
There it is. Ding, 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 ding. I think that might be the egg.
The egg. Lives for a few weeks as a tiny fluffy thing, such as you will see pictured on Easter cards, then becomes hideously naked, eats quantities of corn and meal bought by the sweat of your father's brow, gets diseases called pip, cholera, and other names, stands looking with stupid eyes at the sun, becomes sick and dies.
Oh my God.
A few hens and now and then a rooster intended to serve God's mysterious ends struggle through to maturity. The hens lay eggs out of which some other chickens come, and the dreadful cycle is thus made complete.
Chickens, the women of the bird family.
It is all unbelievably complex. Most philosophers must have been raised on chicken farms. One hopes for so much from a chicken and is so dreadfully disillusioned.
Do we, though?
Do we? We're like, this chicken will mean that we'll make it to Wall Street. Small chickens just setting out on the journey of life look so bright and alert, and in fact, they are so dreadfully stupid. They are so much like people. They mix one up in one's judgments of life. If disease does not kill them, they wait until your expectations are thoroughly aroused and then walk under the wheels of a wagon to go squashed and dead back to their maker.
I don't think a chicken understands that you want anything from them.
Why?
Oh, my God.
He's like, I had all these expectations for you, and then you walk under a wheel.
You were going to go to Cornell and bring our family pride.
Wow.
This guy has some issues.
Vermin infest their youth, and fortunes must be spent for curative powders. In later life, I have seen how a literature has been built up on the subject of fortunes to be made out of the raising of chickens. It is intended to be read by the gods who have just eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Man, this guy must be like just tough to hang out with. just like
a lot of talking.
Yeah, just like tiring.
A lot of talking.
He walks into a bar and everybody's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Sherwood's here. Sherwood's here. Talk to me. Laugh. I'm saying something funny.
It is a hopeful literature and declares that much may be done by simple, ambitious people who own a few hens. Do not be led astray by it. It was not written for you. We are not for you. Go hunt for gold on the frozen hills of Alaska. Put your faith in the honesty of a politician. Believe, if you will, that the world is daily growing better and that good will triumph over evil. But do not read and believe the literature that is written concerning the hen. It was not written for you.
Wow. He's like, go mine gold. Politicians are great. The world is getting better. All of these things would be more believable than a chicken being of any worth.
I hate chickens. I, however, digress.
My just a touch.
I don't even know what the story is
just
yet, buddy.
I do not know.
We went far down that chicken road, my friend. We got to the other side of that for sure. And I'm not sure why.
Good work.
Thank you.
My tale does not primarily concern itself with the hen. If correctly told, it will center on the egg. For 10 years, my father and mother struggled to make our chicken farm pay. And then they gave up that struggle and began another. They moved into the town of Bidwell, Ohio, and embarked on the restaurant business.
What do they do with the chickens?
What about the chicken?
Wait, so he only had to live with them till he was 10.
I know.
And he's still fucking obsessed
with really
chickens.
He really hates chickens.
Oh my God, wow. That's so annoying.
Like some trauma.
This is like the guy that can't get over his high school girlfriend.
But his high school girlfriend was a chicken.
Yeah. Which is what this story is telling us.
Yeah.
After 10 years of worry with incubators that did not hatch and with tiny and in their own way lovely balls of fluff that passed on
incubators
into semi-naked pullerhood and from that into dead henhood, we threw all aside and, packing our belongings on a wagon, drove down Griggs Road towards Bidwell, a tiny caravan of hope looking for a new place from which to start on our upward journey through life. We must have been a sad-looking lot. Not, I fancy, unlike refugees fleeing from a battlefield. Don't compare yourself to a refugee.
Yeah,
You weren't.
Yeah, buddy. You left a chicken farm.
Yeah, you left
a chicken
farm.
Check your privilege, my friend. Yeah. Check your privilege.
Mother and I walked the road. Wait, he and the mom had to walk in the road while the dad gets to ride in the car?
Yeah. Women and children can't be in the
car. They can't be in the car? Because then they might think they could drive.
They have to be seen but not driven.
The wagon that contained our goods had been borrowed for the day from Mr. Albert Griggs, a neighbor. Wait, Griggs of Griggs
of
Road?
Of Griggs Road fame.
Wow.
The
titular road?
The Griggs? out of its side stuck the legs of cheap chairs, and at the back of the pile of beds, tables, and boxes filled with kitchen utensils was a crate of live chickens. You're asking where the
there
chickens are. There they are.
They're the I was chickens. Asking where the chickens
are. Oh, you were asking the chickens. The chickens are there.
Great. Cool.
Cool. And on top of that, in the baby carriage, in which I had been wheeled about in my infancy. Why we stuck to the baby carriage, I don't know. It was unlikely other children would be born, and the wheels were broken.
Man. Whoa. Gloomy. Gloomy. Gloomy dude.
People who have few possessions cling tightly to those they have.
No, that's true.
That is one of the facts that makes life so discouraging.
But is that
what makes life discouraging?
It's very funny to me that he's like this super anti-materialistic kind of a dude, but then also refuses to see the like capitalism, like that is why the chickens are like yeah. dying, basically. Like perhaps it is the fact that you've interrupted their life cycle and trying to make money off of them that they might be a problem. Anyway, continue.
Father rode on top of the wagon. He was then a bald-headed man of 45, a little fat, and from long association with mother and the chickens, he had become habitually silent and discouraged.
Jeez, wow. You put your mom
I'm sorry,
in with
in
the chickens.
Same thing with the chickens?
No.
Don't put me in with the
Sherwood.
Chickens.
Sherwood.
Don't you ever put me in with the chickens. All during our 10 years on the chicken farm, he had worked as a laborer on neighboring farms, and most of the money he had earned had been spent for remedies to cure chicken diseases. On Wilmer's White Wonder Cholera Cure or Professor Bidlow's Egg Producer or some other preparation.
Did you imagine what that shit was made out of?
It was like probably just made out of
such bad chemicals, like, or just nothing also.
Yeah.
It's like a rock that they powdered.
Or some other preparations that mother found advertised in the poultry papers.
He hates his mom.
Really?
There were two little patches of hair on father's head just above his ears. I remember that as a child, I used to sit looking at him when he'd gone to sleep in a chair before the stove on Sunday
Creepy.
Afternoons in the winter. Devil child. I had at that time already begun to read books and I have notions of my own.
What?
You little freak. I fancied something like a broad road. I'm sorry. Have notions of my own. And the bald path that led over the top of his head was, I fancied, something like a broad road. Such a road as Caesar might have made on which to lead his legions out of Rome and into the wonders of an unknown world. Do you know
you
how
know
terrible this guy is?
It's awful.
Like, can you imagine this guy
Do
on a first date?
Do you know how many times Horrible. I've met this guy?
Yeah.
So many times I've met this guy. Oh my God.
Here's the thing about this asshole. Is that he was like, oh, and then my stupid school marm of a mother read these books and got ambitious for some reason. And that's why we're on this chicken farm. And then 2 seconds later, he's like, I'd begun to read and
I
consider
started to read.
Caesar and think that he could have been on my dad's head. Like,
ugh, but
snot,
don't
you
see, it's very
snot.
Interesting when he does it.
He's mm-hmm. very interesting.
It's,
and it's
his place.
It's right, very interesting whenever anybody mentions Caesar in normal conversation.
Right. You're definitely not a dick.
The tufts of hair that grew above father's ears were, I thought, like forests. I fell into a half-sleeping, half-waking state and dreamed I was a tiny thing going along the road into a far beautiful place where there were no chicken farms and where life was a happy, eggless affair. Okay.
What is this dude, vegan or something?
Once read next.
I'll read next. One might write a book concerning our flight from the chicken farm into town. Mother and I walked the entire 8 miles, she to be sure that nothing fell from the wagon, and I to see the wonders of the world.
It's so different. It's so, on the ground.
I know. On the seat of the wagon beside father was his greatest treasure.
I will tell you of that. Is it the horse?
It's an egg.
Is it a gun?
Is it an egg?
Is it his virility? On a chicken farm where hundreds and even thousands of chickens come out of eggs, surprising things sometimes happen. Grotesques. Hey, Kelly's favorite
I love
term
to call
in
things
literature.
Grotesque. Get me some Flannery.
Grotesques are born out of eggs as out of people. The accident does not often occur, perhaps once in 1,000 births. A chicken is, you see, born that has 4 legs, 2 pairs of wings, 2 heads, or whatnot. Okay? The things do not live. They go quickly back to the hand of their maker that has for a moment trembled. The fact that the poor little things could not live was one of the tragedies of life to father. He had some sort of notion that if he could but bring into henhood or roosterhood a 5-legged hen or a 2-headed rooster, his fortune would be made.
These
wow,
people are
what?
Fucked
Dude,
up.
is he like
fucking
a Frankenstein
Island
guy?
Of Dr. Moreau over
yeah.
here.
Is he interesting? So it's like a Siamese
I guess
chicken?
he wants to I'm about to get to it, apparently.
Oh, buckle up.
What? He dreamed of
Wait, is this a prequel to The Greatest Showman on Earth?
Oh my God, that's the end. He dreamed of taking the wonder about to county fairs and of growing rich by exhibiting it to other farmhands.
Cool person.
At any rate, he saved all the little monstrous things that had been born on our chicken farm. They were preserved in alcohol.
No! Each in its own glass bottle! No!
These he had carefully put into a box, and on our journey into town, it was carried on the wagon seat beside him. He drove the horses with one hand and with the other clung to the box.
Sorry, I'm just realizing that he made his wife walk on the road when the seat next to him
did
was
he?
With a preserved chicken.
Yeah. Who wouldn't?
Cool. Great. Just making sure.
No, multiple.
Multiple? I'm sorry. Many.
Not just a chicken.
His, like, menagerie of preserved chickens.
Dead chickens.
Yeah. That are sitting where the wife, and the wife's like, I just have to make sure nothing falls off the wagon.
Everything's fine back here. I'm filthy.
And the kid's like, $2 or $3, two bags, one me.
These he had carefully put into a box, and on our journey into town, it was carried on the wagon seat beside him. He drove the horses with one hand, and with the other clung to the box. When we got to our destination, the box was taken down at once and the bottles removed. All during our days as keepers of a restaurant in the town of Bidwell, Ohio, the grotesques in their little glass bottles sat on a shelf back of the counter. Mother,
I have the omelet.
It was like, I gave him one of the jars. I put one of the jars in the frying pan. I put one of the jars
in the frying
pan. Don't tell your dad. Don't tell your dad.
It's vinegary.
Chewy.
Mother sometimes protested, sometimes, but father was a rock on the subject of his treasure. The grotesques were, he declared, valuable. People, he said, like to look at strange and wonderful things. It is
especially while they're eating.
Yeah. I love my chickens as... He's like a golem with them. My chickens is...
Eat these eggs while you look at my chicken. Did I say that we embarked in the restaurant business in the town of Bidwell, Ohio? You did.
Oh my God, a thousand times.
And also,
I know you did.
I thought that this was a question from Lindsay, and I was like, you haven't read that sentence yet. Did I say? He's like, stop me if you've heard this before. I grew
Shout
up.
Shout out to Bidwell. What?
Greg. So, what's up, Greg?
You guys, this takes a surprising turn.
What? Stop. Shut up.
He exaggerated a little.
Oh.
The town itself lay at the foot of a low hill and on the shore of a small river. Mm-hmm. The railroad did not run through the town, and the station was a mile away to the north at a place called Pickleville.
Shout out to Pickleville.
You know what? Those pickled chickens.
They're gonna
going
get
to Pickleville.
Well. That's why it's called Pickleville.
Getting
That's why
they went down there. To Pickleville.
There had been a cider mill and pickle factory at the station, but before the time of our coming, they had both gone out of business.
I wonder why.
Pickleville.
You know, too much acid? Base? What is that?
Vinegar.
Vinegar is what?
They didn't relish the factory?
Oh.
You didn't.
You should be writing
you
this
didn't.
Story.
Sorry.
I had to. You're so there. Bad.
You're so bad.
You're random.
Blah, 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 pickle. In the morning, in the evening, buses came down to the station along a road called Turner's Pike from the hotel on the main street of Bidwell. Our going to the out-of-the-way place to embark in the restaurant business was Mother's idea. Obviously.
Of course.
That was a Lindsay addition.
Obviously.
She talked of it for a year and then one day went off and rented an empty store building opposite the railroad station. It was her idea that the restaurant would be profitable. Traveling men, she said, would always be waiting around to take trains out of town, and town people would come to the station to await incoming trains.
She wants to hook up with some traveling guys.
She's like, get me out of this hellhole.
Mm-hmm. Like, take me with you.
Wall Street, here I come. Come to the restaurant to buy
penny stocks.
You're not living up to your name, penny stocks. They would come to the restaurant to buy pieces of pie and drink coffee. Now that I am older, I know that she had another motive in going.
What is it? Tell me.
Oh, here it comes,
Fried
you guys.
Green tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe.
I really tried to remember the main character of that book so that I could, like...
Iggy?
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. It burned into my brain.
You read? You're a liar.
No, I watched that movie a lot.
Oh, okay.
I did read that book, though.
But you knew the full name of the book.
Yeah, I did. It's lesbian take knowledge credit. That I have to know it.
Oh, okay.
If not, I get kicked out.
Get out of lesbian town.
Welcome to Bidwell.
Take Greg straight to Bidwell.
Turn left at the pickle factory. It's not open anymore.
Now that I am older, I know that she had another motive in going. She was ambitious for me. Again.
Oh, no, this she is not another me. Motive. She's know, had this motive the whole time.
Ambition is motive. It's not a separate motive. They're the same you know thing.
Her motive was a motive. Her, you know what her motive was? That she wanted something.
Motivated by motivation. Mm-hmm. You see? Two separate things.
She wanted something.
Which is weird, her being a woman and all.
They don't
Between
want.
Her fits of hysteria, she occasionally wanted for things.
Oh, her despite uterus being, is in her head again.
Just locked in the attic for hours on end.
She wanted me to rise in the world, to get into a town school and become a man of the town.
No, she wanted to do
she wanted
her
to
own
fucking
thing.
Leave,
God damn
dude.
It.
She wanted to leave you and your terrible dad and his chickens.
At Pickleville, father and mother worked hard as they always had done. At first, there was the necessity of putting our place into shape to be a restaurant. That took a month. Father built a shelf on which he put tins of vegetables and the
and I'm assuming those fucking yeah. chickens.
He painted a sign on which he put his name in large red letters. Below his name was the sharp command, "Eat here!" That was
nice.
So
nice.
Here's why I said it like that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Eat here.
I would.
Eat here.
All caps. What is that? The president?
Okay. Right? Eat here. Telegram.
And in quotation marks.
Oh.
A showcase was bought and filled with cigars and tobacco. Mother scrubbed the floor and the walls of the room. I went to school in the town and was glad to be away from the farm and from the presence of the discouraged, sad-looking chickens. They still have
oh
the chickens!
Oh my god.
The for chickens... a second, though, I thought it said from the presence of the discouraged, sad-looking children. I was like, yikes.
Yikes. Pickleville's a sad place.
Still, I was not very joyous. In the evening, I walked home from school along Turner's Pike and remembered the children I had seen playing in the town schoolyard. A troop of little girls had gone hopping about and singing. I tried that. Down along the frozen road, I went hopping solemnly on one leg.
Okay, he's like missing.
He's missing the point of hopping.
He's like, they were hopping and singing, so I just kind of jumped on one leg by the railway.
I was on ice, and so it wasn't very fun. I hurt myself badly. Then I got angry at those girls for giving me the idea to hop on one leg on some ice.
You know, the idea to hop better. On one leg did come from those girls.
It and girls, better. When you really think about it, are chickens.
The egg!
Down along the frozen road, I went hopping solemnly on one leg. Hippity hop to the barber shop! I sang shrilly.
Oh my god. Wait, I'm sorry.
Yeah?
This is the saddest fucking thing in the world.
Oh, it gets worse.
It's like, just it's like him being like,
buckle
I'm
in.
Happy!
Buckle in, Kelly.
Oh no.
Wow.
Then I stopped and looked doubtfully about. I was afraid of being seen in my gay mood.
Oh.
It must have seemed to me that I was doing a thing.
Internalized homophobia. I understand. It gets us all at some point in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It must have seemed to me that I was doing a thing that should not be done by one who, like myself, had been raised on a chicken farm where death was a daily visitor. This guy
what?
Really whoa, like is putting some I've shit on himself. Yeah. And again, I tried really hard to remember the next lyric so that I could like be there with some like cool like pop culture knowledge. And I was like, it's not there.
It's fine.
It's not coming. Mother decided that our restaurant should remain open at night. At 10 in the evening, a passenger train went north past our door, followed by a local freight. The freight crew had switching to do in Pickleville. And
mm-hmm.
Welcome to
switching to do in Pickleville. And when the work was done, they came to our restaurant for hot coffee and food. Sometimes one of them ordered a fried egg. I gleefully killed a chicken.
Wait, what?
No.
Oh, I was like, I believe it.
You don't have to kill the chicken for the egg.
Suck it away.
In the morning at 4, they returned northbound and again visited us. A little trade began to grow up. Mother slept at night and during the day tended the restaurant and fed our boarders while father slept. He slept in the same bed mother had occupied during the night. And I went off into the town of Bidwell into school. During the long nights while mother and I slept, father cooked meats that were to go into sandwiches for the lunch baskets of our boarders. Then an idea in regard to getting up in the world came into his head.
Good Lord.
Ambition.
Oh my God.
Getting up in the world. I gotta get up in the world.
You guys, these are honestly the next two sentences. The American spirit took hold of him. He also became ambitious.
Oh God.
What the hell?
He caught the ambition from mother.
Can anybody remind me what year this was actually written?
I don't
want to get you off the page.
Pre-1920.
My God. My God, we've always been awful.
The American spirit.
Okay.
Spirit.
In the long nights when there is little to do, Father had time to think. That was his undoing.
Never let yourself think.
I guess he doesn't like men thinking either. He decided that he had in the past been an unsuccessful man because he had not been cheerful enough, and that in the future, why is this a problem?
This is
whatever.
Weird.
And that in the future, he would adopt a cheerful outlook on life. In the early morning, he came upstairs. What a mistake. He came upstairs and got into bed with mother. She woke and the two talked. From my bed in the corner, I listened. It was Father's.
Oh, no. I forgot about that.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Stop listening, boy. Be in the corner.
Close your ears, boy.
It was Oh, no. Is he always there?
I think he's always there.
Yeah, I think always there.
I think that's his room.
Close
his
your ears, boy. Oh, they weren't having sex.
Oh, good point.
They're both too tired and sad.
It was Father's idea that both he and mother should try to entertain the people who came to eat at our restaurant.
Oh, great.
Wow.
Oh, no.
I cannot remember
Maybe you
his
could
words.
Put on my pickled chickens and dance around.
Put on a show, mother.
You know he calls her mother.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, mother. And he kind of like pokes her. He's like, you're going to do that. You're going to do your dance.
You're going to strip,
mother. The vice president. Hey.
I cannot now remember his words, but he gave the impression of one about to become in some obscure way a kind of public entertainer.
Oh, God.
When people, particularly young people from the town of Bidwell, came into our place, as on very rare occasions they did, bright, entertaining conversation was to be made. From Father's words, I gathered that something of the jolly innkeeper effect was to be sought.
Interesting. Wow.
Something of the jolly innkeeper. Oh, my God.
You know. Mother must have been doubtful from the first, but she said nothing discouraging. It was Father's notion that a passion for the company of himself and mother would spring up in the breasts of the younger people in the town of Bidwell. In the evening, bright, happy groups would come singing down Turner's Pike. They would troop, shouting with joy and laughter, into our place. There would be song and festivity. I do not mean to give the impression that Father spoke so elaborately of the matter. He was, as I have said, an uncommunicative man.
He was dumb.
As I have said, an idiot. They want some place to go. I tell you, they want some place to go, he said over and over.
Is this guy starting the first open mic?
Yeah.
Hang on, I have a tight five. That was as far as he got. My own imagination is filled in the blanks. For 2 or 3 weeks, this notion of Father's invaded our house. We did not talk much, but in our daily lives tried earnestly to make smiles take the place of glum looks. Mother smiled at the boarders, and I, catching the infection, smiled at our cat.
Father, oh my God! I smiled at our cat from my bed in the corner.
The cat, which I used to give the finger to, I finally smiled at for the first time in my life.
It was my first smile. I don't think it was a good one.
Oh, that's true. I thought that was from the book.
It should be in there.
It's hard to tell. Father became a little feverish in his anxiety to please.
Oh, no.
There was no doubt lurking somewhere in him a touch of the spirit of the showman.
Just like,
oh, my God, you
manic
guys.
Energy.
Greatest showman.
Greatest showman.
He did not waste much of his ammunition
this
on the railroad men. At the Oscars. Railroad men he served at night, but seemed to be waiting for a young man or woman from Bidwell to come in to show what he could do. On the counter in the restaurant.
What can he do? He can't do anything. What is he going to do? Oh, no.
No, he's just like, don't understand this next sentence. This guy is insane.
Lay it on me.
Let's
on
do it.
On the counter in the restaurant, there was a wire basket kept always filled with eggs. And it must have been before his eyes when the idea of being entertaining was born in his brain.
Uh-huh.
There was something prenatal about the way eggs kept themselves connected with the development of his idea. At any rate, I don't know. This is what I'm saying.
I think
he's
going to do something with eggs.
Prenatal. You're going to juggle those eggs, buddy.
I think he's going to do that.
I think he's going to juggle those eggs.
Or he's going to like swallow them.
Are you
going to
eat that egg?
It's just going to turn into the Gaston song from Beauty and the Beast.
B.
At any rate, an egg ruined his new impulse in life.
What? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Took a turn. I thought he was all about the eggs.
We're getting to it. Late one night, I was awakened by a roar of anger coming from father's throat.
No.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Both mother and I sat upright in our beds.
What?
With trembling hands, she lighted a lamp that stood on a table by her head. Downstairs, the front door of our restaurant went shut with a bang, and in a few minutes, father tramped up the stairs.
Tramp, tramp, tramp.
He held an egg in his hand, and his hand trembled as though he were having a chill. There was a half-insane light in his eyes.
Just half.
Just a little one. As he stood glaring at us, I was sure he intended throwing the egg at either mother or me.
No, father, don't throw the egg!
No!
I can't take any more of your egg violence.
Then he laid it gently on the table beside the lamp and dropped on his knees beside mother's bed. He began to cry like a boy, and I, carried away by his grief, cried with him. The two of us filled the little upstairs rooms with our wailing voices. It is ridiculous, but of the picture we made, I can remember only the fact that mother's hand continually stroked the bald path that ran across the top of his head. I have forgotten what mother said to him and how she induced him to tell her of what had happened downstairs.
She's like, what the fuck is happening right now?
What the fuck?
What the fuck is happening?
Here's... His explanation also has gone out of my mind.
Oh, come on.
What do you mean? What? How do you not remember what caused that?
Oh, Sherwood. I remember only my
own grief. Is the egg a MacGuffin? Is it an egg MacGuffin?
So.
Is it an egg MacGuffin? Son of a...
Egg MacGuffin!
All of this came about for that joke.
Everything that led to this moment.
Everything in my entire life has led to me making the egg MacGuffin joke.
All of our training, all of our mini podcasts,
all of the books I did not read have led me to making the egg MacGuffin joke.
Sure would.
That was a satisfying joke.
It was very good.
Satisfying.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
I remember only my own grief and fright as the shiny path over father's head glowing in the lamplight as he knelt by the bed.
He's obsessed with his dad's head.
Knelt by the bed. Okay, great. As to what happened downstairs, for some unexplainable reason, I know the story as well as though I had been a witness to my father's discomfiture.
A classic.
One in time gets to know many unexplainable things. On that evening, young Joe Kane, son of a merchant of Bidwell, came to Pickleville to meet his father, who was expected on the 10 o'clock evening train from the south. The train was 3 hours late, and Joe came into our place to loaf about and to wait for its arrival.
I'm just picturing him, like, throwing himself on different chairs.
I'm loafing.
I'm loafing here.
I've scheduled myself for loafing right now. The local freight train came in, and the freight crew were fed. Joe was left alone in the restaurant with father. From the moment he came into our place, the Bidwell young man must have been, all right, must have been puzzled by my father's actions. Get to it!
Wait,
Jesus
sorry,
Christ!
Wait.
Does he kick his egg down the road for a long time?
Oh my God. Another good one.
Nice.
It was his notion that father was angry at him for hanging around. He noticed that the restaurant keeper was apparently disturbed by his presence, and he thought of going out. However, it began to rain, and he did not fancy the long walk to town and back. He bought a 5-cent cigar and ordered a cup of coffee. He had a newspaper in his pocket and took it out and began to read. I'm waiting for the evening train. It's late, he said apologetically.
Defensive right throughout the game.
Okay, calm down. For a long time, father, whom Joe Kane had never seen before, remained silently gazing at his visitor. He was no doubt suffering from an attack of stage fright.
What? The dad?
I don't know.
Oh, wait, so, his moment has arrived to be entertaining.
Oh, this is a young
and he doesn't know what to do. Uh-huh.
Oh, right. So he's like all nervous and the guy's like,
my moment! And the other guy's like, Jesus, dude, leave me alone. I just want a cigar.
He's like, a 5-6-7. No, wait.
It's my time to shine, mother.
Mother, come down.
As so often happens in life, he had thought so much and so often of the situation that now confronted him that he was somewhat nervous in its presence. For one thing, he did not know what to do with his hands.
Classic, relatable.
Classic dad. What do I do with my hands? I don't know. He thrust one of them nervously over the counter and shook hands with Joe Kane. Howdy do, he said.
Oh, no. Help. Howdy do? You fucking yokel.
Ah, God. I can't believe I said howdy do. Joe Kane put his newspaper down and stared at him. Father's eye lighted on the basket of eggs that sat on the counter and he began to talk. Well, he began hesitatingly.
Oh, no.
Well, you have heard of Christopher Columbus, eh?
What? What?
He he seemed to be angry. That Christopher Columbus was a cheat, he declared emphatically. He talked of making an egg stand on its end.
Not untrue. Not incorrect.
He talked, he did. And then he went and he broke the end of the egg.
What?
My father seemed to his visitor to be beside himself at the duplicity of Christopher Columbus. He muttered and swore.
This story turned hilarious.
He declared it was wrong to teach children that Christopher Columbus was a great man when, after all, he cheated at the critical moment. Hey,
you know what?
I like this guy.
You know what? Dad's on the right side of history all of a sudden.
What?
He had declared he would make an egg stand on end, and then when his bluff had been called, he had done a trick. Still grumbling at Columbus, Father took an egg from the basket on the counter and began to walk up and down. He rolled the egg between the palms of his hands. He smiled genially. He began to mumble words regarding the effect to be produced on an egg by the electricity that comes out of the human body. He declared that without breaking its shell and by virtue of rolling it back and forth in his hands, he could stand the egg on its end. He explained that the warmth of his hands and the gentle rolling movement he gave the egg created a new center of gravity, and Joe Kane was mildly interested.
This is so embarrassing. I am so embarrassed for this dad.
Oh, I have handled thousands of eggs, Father said. Oh, no one knows more about eggs than I do.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
He stood the egg on the counter and it fell on its side. He tried the trick again and again, each time rolling the egg between the palms of his hands and saying the words regarding the wonders of electricity and the laws of gravity.
Oh, my God.
When after a half hour's effort, he did succeed in making the egg stand for a moment. He looked up to find that his visitor was no longer watching.
No!
Oh, my God!
By the time he had succeeded in calling Joe Kane's attention to the success of his effort, the egg had again rolled over and laid on its side.
This is
like that singing frog.
Oh my God.
What's that
Hello,
guy saying?
My egg. Hello, my darling.
All right, time now. Wilfred J. I can't remember his name.
Michigan J.
Wilfred? Yeah, sure. Whatever. No, a state.
I remembered a pop culture thing.
Yeah.
hang on. Sorry. A fire with the showman's passion and at the same time a good deal disconcerted by the failure of his first effort, Father now took the bottles containing the poultry monstrosities down from their place on the shelf and began to show them to his visitors.
No! No!
I'm really glad that you've taken over for this part of the story.
I feel like it's a good... That was my moment.
Yeah.
How would you like to have seven legs and two heads like this fellow, he asked.
Oh my God. This is like the beginning of a horror movie when they like talk to the...
This is like Tales from the Crypt when it really kicks into gear and you're like, oh, this is the story.
Oh my God.
He asked, exhibiting the most remarkable of his treasures. A cheerful smile played over his face. He reached over the counter and tried to slap Joe Kane on the shoulder.
No.
As he had seen men do in Ben's Head Saloon. When he was a young farmhand and drove to town on Saturday evenings. Boy, oh boy, does that description roll on down Triggs Road or whatever it's called.
Oh no. This is like him being like, he smiled like he had read about that friends do.
Exactly.
He's trying to emulate human behavior, but he is a human.
Is this a Star Trek The Next Generation episode?
Data.
I feel like Data is like, I am trying to understand human activity.
Are you familiar with Christopher Columbus?
He was a cheat. But not for reasons you're thinking right now.
It's about eggs.
I did the Star Trek podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Forever
Treks
Dog,
in the City.
Shout out. And they covered TNG. And the episode I had to watch was Data trying to learn comedy.
It's always Data trying to learn
things. You and everyone said, being
he
racist.
Was being taught comedy by Joe Piscopo.
Oh.
Well, there's your first problem.
It was amazing.
All right. Here we go.
What's
back
Dad
into
gonna
it.
Do?
You ready? Mm-hmm. His visitor was made a little ill by the sight of the body of the terribly deformed bird floating in the alcohol in the bottle and got up to go. Coming from behind the counter, Father took hold of the young man's arm and led him back to the seat.
No,
he grew a little angry and for a moment had to turn his face away and force himself to smile.
Wait, sorry. Okay, imagine you're at a bar and you're like, you know what?
Dude was mad at me for hanging out and now he's showing me weird bird bodies. I want to go. And they're like, no.
And he like grabs your arm and then turns away and is like, and then turns around and he's like, hi.
Get a hold of yourself, father.
Father.
Father. Father. Ben's Head Saloon. Ben's Head Saloon on a Saturday night. Then he put the bottles back on the shelf. No. In an outburst of generosity, he fairly compelled Joe Kane to have a fresh cup of coffee and another cigar at his expense. Okay. Then he took a pan and, filling it with vinegar, taken from a jug that sat beneath the counter, declared himself about to do a new trick.
No.
I will heat this egg in a pan of vinegar, he said. Why? Then I will put it through the neck of a bottle without breaking the shell. When the egg is inside the bottle, it will resume its normal shape and the shell will become hard again. Then I will give the bottle with the egg in it to you. You can take it.
Lucky day.
You can take it about with you wherever you go. Oh, people will want to know how you got the egg in the bottle. Don't tell them. Keep them guessing. That is the way to have fun with this trick.
Oh my God. No.
Father grinned and winked at his visitor.
No.
Joe Kane decided that the man who confronted him was mildly insane but harmless. He drank the cup of coffee that had been given to him and began to read his paper again.
I'm crying.
When the egg had been heated in vinegar, I can't imagine the smell at this point.
Horrid. Horrid.
Cigars and cooking vinegar with eggs in them? Come on.
I can't get over the
yikes.
And you can show it to people, and when they ask you how, don't tell them.
Keep them guessing. That is the way to have fun with this trick.
Slap of the arm.
Oh, no. Ben Tessaloon. When the egg had been heated in vinegar, Father carried it on a spoon to the counter and going back into the room, got an empty bottle. He was angry because his visitor did not watch him as he began to do his trick, but nevertheless, he persisted. No, it didn't say that. Nevertheless, went
stronger together
to work. Onward! For a long time, he struggled, trying to get the egg to go through the neck of the bottle.
No.
He put the pan of vinegar back on the stove, intending to reheat the egg, then picked it up and burned its fingers!
ouch. This is the story.
a long lead-up. To a decent payoff, I would say.
This redeems the entire story. I understand all the chicken talk now.
I understand the chickens now.
We should have more faith.
You know what? High risk, high reward.
Sorry. After a second bath in the hot vinegar, the shell
of
the egg...
No, he did it again!
...had softened a little, but not enough for his purpose. He worked and worked, and a spirit of desperate determination took possession of him.
Oh my God, no.
Otherwise known as the American spirit. When he thought that at last the trick was about to be consummated, the delayed train came in the station and Joe Kane started to go nonchalantly out at the door. Father made a last desperate effort to conquer the egg and make it do the thing that would establish his reputation as one who knew how to entertain guests who came into his restaurant.
No.
What a sentence! Holy shit!
I am so stressed. I am sweating. I'm covered in sweat. I am so stressed out. Your glasses are fogging up.
Just wait.
I'm so stressed.
It's gonna get better.
No!
And I haven't even gone that far ahead. All right. That sentence was a paragraph. Holy shit. All right.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. I really want to perform this well, so I'm giving myself a second to collect myself. This is public domain theater, after all. He worried the egg. He attempted to be somewhat rough with it. He swore, and the sweat stood out on his forehead. The egg broke under his hand.
No!
When the contents spurted all over his clothes, Joe Kane, who had stopped at the door, turned and laughed.
He laughed?
Oh, no.
A roar of anger rose from my father's throat. He danced and shouted a string of inarticulate words. Grabbing another egg from the basket on the counter, he threw it! Just missing the head of the young man as he dodged through the door and escaped. Father came upstairs to mother and me with an egg in his hand. I do not know what he intended to do. I imagine he had some idea of destroying it, of destroying all eggs. And that he intended to let mother and me see him begin.
Let you see me begin.
You watch this. You watch it. When, however, he got into the presence of mother, something happened to him. He laid the egg gently on the table.
Oh, no.
And dropped on his knees by the bed, as I have already explained.
Oh, wait, but he said he forgot. Wait, so I thought this was the second time the dad came.
Dude, I don't know.
I don't understand.
He later decided to close the restaurant for the night and to come upstairs and get into bed. When he did so, he blew out the light, and after much muttered conversation, both he and mother went to sleep. I suppose I went to sleep also, but my sleep was troubled. Scrambled, you might say.
He did not
that was me.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I hope.
I awoke at dawn and for a long time looked at the egg that lay on the table. I wondered why eggs had to be and why from the egg came the hen who again laid the egg.
What?
Oh, chicken or egg. Classic.
The question got into my blood.
No.
It stayed there, like cholesterol. It stayed there, I imagine, because I am the son of my father.
Oh.
At any rate, the problem remains unsolved in my mind. And that, I conclude, is but another evidence of the complete and final triumph of the egg. At least as far as my family is concerned.
Oh my god! Holy shit!
Bravo!
Dude, bravo! That story ramped up! Oh my god!
To be totally honest, none of that would have been funny with all of that pointless drivel at the beginning.
Seriously?
To really just set the table. Oh, it truly was the toast for that egg. I mean, oh my god.
Wow.
Holy shit.
You know what? I think I respect so this art.
I don't Sherwood, know if I like it.
Sherwood, you've done it again.
Sherwood. Wow. Wow.
Wow.
I also love that, like, I mean, if that was written now, like, Joe Kane would have been murdered. They would have been burying him in the backyard.
Yeah.
They would have been feeding him for dinner. And then everyone would have loved the pancakes and sausage.
Oh, my God.
And eat here in Pickleville.
They would have fucking fed him to the chickens. And that would have been the thing that cured those damn chickens.
Absolutely. Hey, but this is public domain. Let's write that script.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Let's go.
Sell it to Netflix.
It's a 13-part series.
Oh my god! 12 parts are the beginning, and the last episode is all that.
All of this nightmare.
And then people are like, "What?"
12 episodes of just a man in front of a camera complaining about chicken farms,
and then just people walking next to a carriage. Don't drop anything.
Oh, happy day! Hop, hop, hop!
Oh my god!
What a sad story. Relatability of that awkward attempt. To be entertaining by a man who doesn't even know what the word means.
No, I mean,
honestly. He was trying so hard.
I did like that paid off. Because remember at first when they were like, he was going to entertain, and we were like, doing what?
Yeah, I thought he was going to drop it
squishing
entirely.
Squishing an egg into a bottle.
He's like, now wait just a second, he's going to do it. Don't leave.
Don't tell them.
Sit down.
That's part of the fun of it.
We're having fun, right? Oh. What a story. Oh, man. So that was Sherwood Anderson.
That was
the
great.
Egg.
That was great.
Fantastic performances. Fantastic performance, Rena.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that,
thank you.
That's where you took over.
I felt great right there.
Yeah.
I mean, y'all were fantastic as well. I feel like as a trio, we just like really, it was everything fit. Oh, perfect casting.
Perfect casting.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun. I feel like if I was listening to this podcast, I'd be cracking up at my desk. I'd be walking away. This would be one of those gotta push away from the desk. Absolutely. I mean, if I don't say so myself. If I don't toot my own egg. You know what I mean?
Classic. Egg McGuffin.
Egg McGuffin. That will
egg,
live.
Egg McGuffin. Oh my god. If
egg
we don't
MacGuffin.
Make Podmas with this episode, with that joke, I don't know what Podmas is for.
For nothing. They're for nothing.
Jagoffs.
Fuck you. Podmas.
Thanks again for doing
this. Thanks for being on the
this
show.
This was such a delight.
This was so wonderful. I can't wait to do it again.
Yay.
Straight up, I loved it. It was super fun.
Four stars. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I mean, you guys plugged so much stuff at the beginning, but yeah, check out Take My Wife. It's on iTunes and Amazon, not the Prime thing, but the other thing, and then Google Play, and then on May 1st, it's going to be on Stars on their streaming app.
Nice.
Cool. They bought a bunch of CISO shows, so that's cool. It has like a new
I'm glad they
life.
Have a home now.
Yeah, so check that out and like follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rhea Butcher, R-H-E-A-B-U-T-C-H-E-R, and then also listen to my podcast Three Swings on Forever Dog, because it's a couple episodes in, so check it out.
It's real fun.
Yeah. Can't wait to have y'all on it.
Ah.
Do you like baseball? I don't care.
No, great.
But my come on and did. Talk about baseball. Perfect. I love it. Good enough.
Thank you so much for listening, sweet listeners. sweet gentle listeners. This has been Public Domain Theater. Sherwood Anderson's The Egg, as read by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Keita, and Rhea Butcher.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.